Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hello and welcome to the On Call Room,
a Grey's Anatomy podcast.
I'm Abby.
I'm Bree,
and it's a beautiful day to podcast.
Welcome, everyone. We are a Grey's Anatomy podcast, deep diving every single episode of Grey's Anatomy. We are a spoilers podcast.
Spoilers.
So if you haven't seen it, go watch it from season one and head on up to episode 9, 10, and 11 of season 14. You can listen to this. We have... that's what we're doing today. Those are the three.
It's a lot.
Yeah. There's so much. You can tell I'm a little like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like exasperated, because there's just so much in these three
episodes. I'm going to make you read the second monologue.
Yeah, that's fine. so we have 1-800-799-7233. Then we have Personal Jesus, and then Don't Fear the Reaper. Again, episodes 9, 10, 11. It's going to be a heavy one, y'all. So just buckle up.
Yeah. And also, we would love, if you have listened to the podcast and you want more, and you have, and know you've heard about it by now if you listen to the podcast, but we have a Patreon account. It is patreon.com/theoncallroom. You can pledge to be an intern, a resident, or an attending. These help, these pledges help us get to produce the podcast every week. We're really thankful to all of you. There's bonus episodes. There's a private Facebook group. There's Zoom hangouts. You can call Time of Death. You can leave a voicemail. There's the Facebook group. I already said that, but it's really fun. People are posting in it even now when there's no current Grey's on. Mm-hmm. So if none of your friends watch Grey's Anatomy and you need a community, please join ours.
And you also can get a little something called post-op.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Abby and I went live a couple of days ago. You might have seen that on our Instagram, which is at the On Call Room. And we're going to talk about that, because who even knows what we were doing?
I'm sure you were all confused.
Yeah. So if you're a $10 patron, don't hit stop after Time of Death, and you can hear us talk about our weekend. Just because we felt like that all of the content of these three episodes were really important to keep in the main part of our podcast. So you're welcome.
Yes.
And then finally, please rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. Five scalpels, please. We appreciate it.
We love reading them.
We do.
Okay. I have a little personal announcement. Something that Bree and I were talking about, and like, I think why most of us love this show is that, or hate it, it's what makes it sad and what makes it wonderful at the same time, is that this show so often brings storylines to the front that are otherwise like not heard of. I mean, even in this one, I feel like we have like questioning your faith. We have police brutality. We mm-hmm. have all sorts of things that come up that like, if it doesn't directly affect your life, you might not know how to experience that. So something I wanted to share, if you follow me on Instagram, you probably have seen him, but I have a brother named Trevor. He's 31 years old. He lives across the state, so about 2-hour drive from where I live, around 2.5, 3 from my parents, in a group home. He has autism. He lived with my parents until he was about, 5 years ago, so 26, 27, when he aged out of the school system here. And my parents got older. He just got harder and harder to care for. He is very funny. He loves Disney. He recites and basically speaks through movie lines. But he does have some behavioral issues, and he does have autism. And it's not easy to care for someone like that and like have a life. And for 26 years, he was able to go to school for part of the day, which was really helpful. But when he stopped that, we had to look for other options. And so he lives across the state, which is unfortunately right now in our situation, the only place that he can go in the state of Michigan. Currently where we live on the west side, there's no opportunities, no group homes, just nothing for someone with his level of care and needs. And also, I just want to preface that he's definitely not the only one. The wait list for places for adults with autism, amongst other disabilities, is crazy, crazy high. It's just outrageous. So we're pretty private about it because it's something that is hard to talk about, and it's something that there's really nothing that anyone can do. And so right now, for the past 5 years, each of my parents once a week have been driving 6 hours total. They have been filling the gaps to make up for where he lives. The place he lives is fine. They're keeping him alive, mm-hmm. but his care is not good. He gets a shower only when my parents get there. He only gets his face shaved when they go there. My mom does his laundry because they were losing things and it just wasn't getting clean. My parents both prepare his meals because they won't do anything for his special diet. So they have to shop, buy, deliver, prep all of the meals. And when we get there, there's about like an hour and a half to 2 hours spent of just getting him back to like base level. Where he lives is with 12 additional residents. It's incredibly loud. The staff turnover is insane. And if you know anything about autism, autism needs consistency. Mm-hmm. And so there's just not that. It's really, there's a couple great caregivers, but for the most part, it's pretty awful. And he's pretty much just surviving. We finally decided that it's time to try to change this. And our county that we live in has told us that the only way that Trevor can move closer to us is if we purchase a house. So if we can find and buy a house for Trevor, the county will place another resident receiving similar services as a roommate and provide 24/7 staffing. The purchase of this home would honestly be life-changing for not just Trevor, but all of us. Right now he sees just me or my mom or my dad once a week. And if he were able to move home, we would be able to see him multiple times a week. Other people that know him would visit. It would just like make his circle and his community so much larger. On a personal level, since you all don't know my parents and you know my mom, kind mm-hmm. of, and you don't know my brother, but you do know me. As my parents get older and my mom had the heart attack this year, my dad just had spine surgery. The ability to fill these gaps has become a lot more difficult. And so if those two things that happened with my parents had happened at the same time, all of that care would have come on me, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a full-time job. So if Trevor were close to home, my parents could visit more often. They could visit much longer while they're older. There wouldn't be such a long drive. It would be so incredible. So we are fundraising, which is very scary. And I feel like we just asked you for money on Patreon, but this is a little bit different. We are fundraising to try to raise money to purchase a house for Trevor to make all this possible. So that being said, if you want to know more about my brother, you can check out my personal Instagram. It's at Abby L. Moore. There are highlights there that I've had for the past 5 years that are just like hilarious clips of him every time I go to visit. There's also a video we made about this that is on our GoFundMe, which is going to be in the show notes, thanks to Bree. And there's a really, just the video is really lovely. It really explains it. I probably didn't even need to say all of this, but this really is kind of an emergency, and it's so weird to ask for things, but you are our community. And I feel like part of me feels like we've spent the last 5 years getting to know each other on this podcast. It just sort of feels like kismet, and it wouldn't feel right not at least asking. And when I say asking, if you cannot donate, I absolutely understand. Please share. You mm-hmm. have a community of yourself. Maybe you know someone else who has someone with autism or someone that is very passionate about this topic. I would love for you to just share. Honestly, that is like even almost, it's not better, but they're all equal, but it's really important sharing it. So anyways, I've talked a lot, very thankful. Check out the stories on my Instagram if you want. Feel free to, if you have any thoughts, like you can email us at theoncallroompod@gmail.com, but everything is going to be in the show notes. Perfect. Did I say too much?
No, wow, was long. No, thank you for sharing all of that. And I'm just really grateful to the community that we have created, because I just know that our Grace BBs are going to like step up and are here to support you and your family. Again, everything will be in the show notes. But yeah, if you have any questions about it, shoot us an email at theoncallroompod@gmail.com.
Yeah. And there's tons of information on the GoFundMe. So if you're like, wait, I didn't quite understand, go ahead and read that. Watch the video. It'll probably answer any questions that I forgot. But thank you so much. I hope you enjoy it. And I hope that you feel like, you know, you learn a little bit more about a hidden part of a lot of people's lives.
Yeah. And I hope you really see, I mean, this is a really difficult thing. And I'm really hoping that you can bring Trevor home. But also to just see the joy in Trevor, too. I think it's really cool. I have seen the video. And. Yeah. He's not like that all the time, obviously. Right. But just to see someone and just give like dignity to someone, yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So
it's funny. He's cute.
He is funny.
And he loves Disney.
He can hold a note.
Oh, yeah. There's a great singing moment.
Yeah.
It's really good. I'd love your thoughts on it, listeners, if you think you can get a record label for Muppets songs. But yeah, if you like Disney, if you like Fraggle Rock,
you're going to love Trevor.
Yeah. So thank you so much. If you want to hear the weird stories of our lives, stick around for post-op.
Yeah, but
this
please
is,
do.
This is a real part of our lives, too. So thank you.
Do you want to take a quick break before we get into it?
Yeah, let's take a break. Welcome back. I didn't know who was going to go. So we have so much Grey's Anatomy to talk about.
So much. So we're just going to get right into it.
Yeah. Like I, first of all, tell the listeners what you did.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, we're going to get into it, but there is the episode with April and Matthew.
Episode 10.
Episode 10. And so I watched an episode in the morning, Sunday morning, went to a baseball game, came back. Our internet was out, so I started watching an episode on my phone. And I think what it did is it didn't like line up and it skipped an episode. And so I watched that episode, and that was the Bailey heart attack.
Which I guess would have made sense. Like, oh, I guess they're breaking like, from
yeah,
the hackers.
Yeah, that's what I thought happened. Like, oh, they're doing like a weird bottle episode and like making us wait. And then I started watching episode 12, and I was so confused. I was like, we really had to wait this long to figure out what happens with Paul. Like, we're not even talking about this.
Oh, yeah, because he's just dead
and gone. He's just gone. And then the part that was really getting me, I was like, why is April, like, who did she lose? Like, she keeps talking about, and we'll get into it in episode 12, but she, like, she's struggling. And I was, Abby and I were on the same Grey's Anatomy, like, Google Doc. And I was like, I wrote a note, like, I'm so confused. And you responded to my note, like, this is what's happening. And I was like, yeah, but when did it happen? And so I paused. And by this time, our internet was back on. So I was on the TV. And John and I were going to watch Top Chef after.
You're almost there.
I told them, like, one episode. I was, like, almost done with episode 12. And I paused and I went, holy shit. I watched the wrong episode, John. And I have to watch another one. So anyway, I watched them all out of order. It's super confusing.
You watched 4 hours of
I watched 4 hours of Grey's Anatomy. I might start talking about episode 12 and just be like, that hasn't happened yet. So anyway.
Okay, so we said the names of them already. I'll read the first one.
Okay.
Because I don't want to read the second one.
Okay.
You got this. Okay, first one, Meredith Grey says, there are some moments in the OR that everything goes to hell, and no matter how much you've seen, how ready you are, how much help you have, nothing can truly prepare you. You have to keep going or your patient will die. The trouble is, in these moments, every instinct in your body tells you to freeze. So what do we do when instincts tell us to freeze, when we can't see the right answer? In those moments, it's usually a good idea to trust the instinct and say pause, because decisions made in the heat of the moment can ruin a whole lot of lives. Meredith Grey.
In the course of one day, Job received 4 messages. Each was separate news that his livestock, servants, and 10 children had all died. He continued to be a faithful servant. He still prays to God. He persevered. Job's faith was tested and he passed the test. And for his faith, God rewarded Job with twice what he had before. Okay. And this is...
We don't have to read it.
Okay. What Jesus said on the cross, because I don't know how to pronounce it. That's what Jesus said on the cross before he died. My God, why have you forsaken me? Job asked the question too, but he kept the faith. And what did he get for it? Replacement children. PTSD. Was it worth it to have been a faithful servant? Or would it have been better to just curse God's name from the beginning? Where was God throughout all of Job's suffering and pain? He was winning a bet with Satan. Makes you wonder where he is through all of the unfairness and inequity and cruelty in the world. Where is he now? April Kepner.
Oh, such chills. A good one. Yeah. Next one. On their deathbed, nobody wishes they'd worked more. That's the trite little phrase people trot out when they want to play hooky or spend too much money on vacation or shame working parents for missing their kid's soccer game for a board meeting. On your deathbed, no one wishes they'd worked more. Tell that to the people who love their work. It's not about whether you spend your life in a boardroom, your bedroom, or a beach with a Mai Tai in Maui. When you look back on your life, the only thing that matters is, did you spend it doing what you love with the people you love? Were you happy? Did you make the most of this beautiful, terrifying, messed up life? Did you let go of all the things that held you back? so you can hold on to what matters most. Miranda Bailey. 3 different monologue readers.
Yeah. Okay, shotgun workup. We have Judy Kemp, enlarged spleen.
Claude Markham, cancer and ARDS.
Frankie Boehner, factor 5 laden, AVM and brain bleed.
Larry Keyes, tracheoinominate fistula.
Paul Stadler, tachycardia, hypertension, head laceration, crack ribs, severe concussion, second impact syndrome.
And an asshole.
And a fucking asshole.
Karen Taylor, pregnancy, vulvar hematoma, DIC, help syndrome.
Ruby Taylor,
coarctation
of the aorta.
David Roman, wrist laceration, severed tendons.
Eric Sterling, gunshot wound, severed carotid artery.
Miranda Bailey, myocardial infarction.
And then Morgan, broken femur, road rash, clot.
Can you imagine being a doctor and being like, you have tracheoinominate fistula? Question mark.
I'm not sure if that's what you have, but it sounds
okay,
like.
Okay, I will read this long round because Lord knows I wrote it in Who Knows.
Great.
Okay, here we go. We're going to sum it up. Buckle in, everyone. Joe comes into contact with Paul. This was how the episode ended previously. Oh no, this is my wrong thing. Hang on. Okay, we pick up where we left off with Joe coming face to face with her ex-husband, Paul. He introduces Joe to his fiance, Jenny. Arizona recognizes him and gushes over his research work. Joe is frozen in place. When Joe eventually leaves, Paul tells her he will find her later to sign the divorce papers. Paul offers to help out at the hospital and ends up operating with Meredith. When Meredith learns who he is, she confronts him and says she is a friend of Joe Wilson. He spins a lie about how unstable Joe is and that she will lie to anyone to get her to believe her story. Joe is listening to all of this in the gallery. After the surgery, Meredith tells Joe that she knows her and believes her. She goes with Joe to get Paul to sign the divorce papers. Before the couple leaves, Joe has Robbins distract Paul so that she can talk to the fiance, Jenny. She tells her what Paul did to her, how he beat her, and that she understands how scary it is. She offers to help Jenny, but Jenny refuses to take help. Joe ends up giving her cell number and saying all she has to do is call her. Paul and Jenny leave, but not soon after that, they come back and Paul confronts Joe and Meredith about the cell phone number. He intimidates both of them and Meredith pretends to call security. He leaves and says that he now has her phone number and that he will forever be able to find her. Alex and Joe go home and the scene that shows up the next day at the hospital is that Paul has been in a car accident, a hit and run, and is in critical condition. Meredith looks at Joe and Alex and says, "What did you do?" Joe says that they called her because their phone number was in his pocket. When he becomes stable, Jenny and Joe approach Paul and tell him that they are going to take him to court and that she is going to leave him. He threatens her and tries to get up to leave the hospital, despite Amelia saying he shouldn't. And as he gets up, he falls and hits his head and has another concussion. This leaves him brain dead. And surprisingly, Joe is the one who is still married to him and has to make the call about whether or not to unplug life support. She finds out that he is an organ donor and she makes his life have some sort of good by donating all of his organs.
Nice job. The hacker still has full control over the hospital, and the new intern, Casey Parker, tells Bailey that he has hacked the federal government before and he is willing to help as long as he doesn't get into trouble. Bailey goes into the FBI and begins to talk with them with the script that Casey wrote. Eventually, Bailey lets Casey do the hacking and the hackers are taken down. She confronted the FBI as well because they were too busy worrying about an arrest and not thinking about saving patients. Bailey asked Casey why he hacked the DMV, and he says his old license referred to him as female and they wouldn't change it, so he did. He's a proud trans man, but he wants people to get to know him before they learn his private medical history. She thanks him for his service.
Maggie and Jackson operate together after coming back from the helicopter and end up in the showers together. The code to the uniform is locked, so they are stuck waiting in just their towels. They have conversations yet again about their childhood and how different they were. They also discuss that since they aren't siblings, they can decide what their relationship is to each other. Jackson asks her if she wants to take a chance on this, and Maggie doesn't say no, but she does say it's complicated.
Richard complains to April about how much work the research contest is going to be and pretends that mentally he is unable to do it. He describes all the time and effort and organization it's going to take, and it entices April into offering to take it over for him. This way, Richard tricked her so he could compete.
This is about episode 10. This episode is very April-centric and starts with her in the shower. She's handling the ER that morning and a woman named Karen comes into the hospital and is giving birth, but is trying desperately to wait until her husband gets there. April works on her, and when the husband arrives, we learn that it is Matthew. April helps deliver the baby, and afterwards, she gets to know Matthew's new wife, Karen. She is curious about April and says that it's good to finally put a face to the name. Karen later complained of pain in her vagina. April examined her and diagnosed a vulvar hematoma. She drained it, which relieved the pain, and later Karen ended up in more pain, and her BP and heart rate were elevated, so she was rushed into surgery. She had DIC and HELLP syndrome, which was causing her organs to fail. Arizona decided that she needed to do a hysterectomy. After surgery, she was unable to be resuscitated. April and Matthew also had a long conversation before this where Matthew said that it's thanks to April he ended up with Karen. He makes references to God knowing what's best and that he had a plan all along. You can tell by watching this conversation that April doesn't feel the same way. She lost a child, she had Harriet, and then she and Jackson are no longer together. She also interacts with a patient who took the Bible literally and tried to cut his hand off for masturbating too much. After a really beautiful conversation with Karina about how orgasm is a good thing and that God created it, he starts to question his faith in all of the scriptures in the Bible. He and April go back and forth until he finally asks her what is the point of it all, to which she answers, "I don't know." After this conversation, losing Karen and also finding out that Paul's simple concussion ended up leading to a death, she heads to a bar, downs a shot, and goes home with an intern.
Episode 10 is especially important because of the storyline of Eric Sterling, a name which is a combination of Eric Garner and Alton Sterling, both of whom were killed by police. Eric was climbing the roof of his own house when the police saw him, assumed he was breaking in, and shot him. When his family arrives, we learn that he had lost his keys, already gone and looked for the neighbor who wasn't home, and ended up climbing in the window to get into his house. The police do not believe this story and keep treating him like a criminal. Eric's carotid ends up bursting after surgery, and he does not make it. This sparks Jackson to give an incredibly moving speech to the police, as well as Bailey and Ben deciding that it's time to give Tuck the talk. Tuck holds his hands behind his head and says his name and age and that he's unarmed. Bailey and Ben coach him and tell him exactly what to do if he's ever confronted by cops. Even if his white friends are mouthing off, he can't do that. He can't fight back or talk back. His only goal is to get home safely. They want him to come home again and grow up to be anything and everything he wants to be. He's amazing and perfect, and they want him to stay that way.
Bailey and Ben are putting up a happy front for when Tuck is in the car, but as soon as he leaves, they stop talking to each other. Ben tries to tell Bailey about his physical test he has, but she completely ignores him. She has him drop her off at Seattle Press, where she has a meeting. But when she gets to the front desk, she tells him that she believes she's having a heart attack. She tries to run her own reports. The head of cardio comes in and tries to tell her that it's just stress. She says she is having a heart attack. Maggie and Richard come in to check on Bailey, and they find her on top of a patient in the bed next to her who started coding. Bailey is breathing heavily and passes out. She gets taken into surgery where they are opening up the blockage. She starts talking about Star Wars, and she calls the doctor an Ewok. Richard and Maggie are sitting in the waiting room, and Richard tells Maggie that he will be fine when she is fine. We also learn that Bailey had a sister before she was born named Danielle. She lived 2 months and died of SIDS. This is why her mom has been so careful with her. Bailey's cath surgery goes well, but then she goes into a full-blown heart attack. Richard convinces the Seattle Press doctor to give Maggie privileges to do a less invasive surgery. Right before surgery, she tells Maggie to call Ben. She makes it out of surgery okay, and Ben is immediately at her side. He tells her he quit at the fire station, and she tells him he doesn't need to do that, and he deserves to be happy.
Whoa. Okay, let's take a deep
breath. Let's take a deep cleansing breath. And then a nice sip of wine.
Okay, so what's your first note?
You read yours first because I'm scrolling 8 things down to find my notes.
Oh, here's Jenny, Joe's ex's fiance.
Why did I write, "I'm so happy you're okay. Paul has a fiance named Jenny." Does Paul say that to her?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think he does. Like, "Oh, wow, I'm so glad you're okay." Like
this, I also thought my second note is a better note than first note. Says, this is such a good representation of the trauma response, like tunnel vision and freeze and like the background. Yeah. I just thought they did a really good job showing like what like being in trauma can feel like.
Yes. Yeah. And he is, I feel like, which is good. I mean, they took everything I think that is to be said about like an abuser and put him into one character. You know, like I think all of the parts that sometimes are a part of abusers are they put in there. And like the way that he immediately twists it, like looks like you finally got the help you needed. Like immediately makes her this crazy person.
Yeah. I mean, they don't ever say it, but both of them talking, his new fiance and Joe, I mean, they talk explicitly about Paul gaslighting them.
Yes.
Like, and talk about, like, I think they do a really good job talking about, like, how it feels. Like, you slowly start feeling crazier and crazier in a relationship
to
like
where
that.
You start to believe them.
Yeah, which is, you know, gaslighting.
I hated it, but when she talked about how her circle got smaller and smaller.
Yes. Yeah. Just, yeah, pinpoint all of the things. Also, when she kind of admits it and she, that she is in an abusive relationship or experiencing intimate partner violence. And I'm trying to find the note. But I was like, that's fucking it. We didn't fall for someone who beat us. And I was like, that is exactly right. And Joe talks about it's slow. Like, it is a slow fucking burn. And I think oftentimes, I think there's definitely more out there about having empathy for people who are, who have experienced intimate partner violence. But there's still that, like, why did you stay with him / or whatever? Yeah. And it's because it's not like someone comes in and punches you in the face.
Right.
That's not what it's like at all. And so I think they do a really good job like discussing the cycle, but in a way that you would do with someone who like gets it. Like,
I wonder if that's why they had the character Jenny.
Yeah.
Because then her and Joe could talk about it. Because otherwise Joe talking to someone else, like they're just empathizing, but they don't know.
Yes. I think that was such a good choice because it's like two women coming together and being like, that's exactly right. I experienced that too.
Yes.
And
I thought was crazy is like, because we've told the whole plot. So like things that stood out to me is like how I feel like Meredith is very unintimidatable. That's not a word, but like hard to intimidate. Yeah. And I felt like you could sense the way that he was and the way that it scared Meredith. You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, Meredith was able to like stand up to him and be that boundary line. But like when she fake called security, like she definitely like, he got to her too. Like he is so... uses the way at the divorce signing, how they were both sitting and he stayed standing.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking reminded me of when Trump was debating Hillary and stood behind her. Yes. You know, like it's that same power
dynamics.
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah.
How she wouldn't touch the pen.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh.
Another part that stuck out to me is like when Joe breaks down to Meredith about like, he said all these things, but that's not me. And she was like, you're Joe Wilson. Like, I know who you are.
That line got me goosebumps.
Yeah. I was also really worried too that like, we would go through like a long phase of like everyone in the hospital liking him. I was happy that we like moved through that quite quickly. And I was really happy too, because like, you know, Karev got irritated with Joe. Like, where the fuck were you? We gave this kid heparin or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That they didn't dwell on that.
Yeah, that it was like, he sees Paul and he's like, find Joe right now.
I know. I actually like, I feel like there might be some people who feel like Alex's response was very like masculine, you know, whatever. But like, I actually loved it. I felt like, it almost felt like he was using his power as a man to fucking protect her in a way, like, and as a partner, and was just like, I don't know. It felt aggressive, but it felt necessary.
Yeah. And I don't even know that, like, I think he was definitely concerned for her safety, but I think he was concerned for her emotional safety too.
Yes.
I think that's
make sure she's safe.
Yeah. Like really a big part of it is like, she needs to come here. Number one, I need to know she's physically safe, but also like she needs support right now.
And that he dropped it, or not dropped it, but like he was okay with her being like, I'm with Helm, I'm safe.
Yes.
He didn't be like, well, then get your ass here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that was enough for him to know that she's not alone.
Exactly.
And, you know, I don't know. I felt, it's that devastating knowing that they don't end up together. But I really feel like his love for her is super like, it just felt really real in this episode.
There was also that scene where we get Robbins to pull Paul away from Jenny. Oh, yeah. And then, but like, that was such an intense scene watching Joe talk to Jenny and being like, I know what's going on.
Right.
I can see it. And I'll like slip you my number. And then when he shows back up for a second, I was like, is Joe dreaming? Like, is he actually here? Or is she having like a nightmare that like he found the phone number?
Do you think they never exactly explicitly say, like he says that Jenny told him, you know, that's what he says. He's like, Jenny told me everything. Do you think that's what happened? Or do you think Paul found the phone number?
I think Paul found the phone number and then
twisted intimidated, the story.
Well, no, intimidated the shit out of Jenny to say who it was. And Jenny's terrified.
Right.
So, of course, she was honest and like, that's Joe's number.
And that...
to protect herself was like, she's crazy. She came up to me and said this, this, and this.
And I felt so bad for Joe before Paul dies, where like, Meredith's like, you won't ever be alone. And she's like, is that the rest of my life? Like, I have... And she's like, we'll get a restraining order. But like, we all know...
Restraining orders often don't do shit.
No. And so like... that to me was like, I think to end the circle, like he had to die or something or get arrested because like, and they just didn't want to go into Law & Order SVU on this podcast or on this show. But like, I feel like that fear of like, I'm not okay. I'm not safe until he's gone.
Right.
Or behind bars.
So how do we think the hit and run happened? Was it Jenny? Was it?
It says it was a drunk driver.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Oh, yeah. It's at the very end. Meredith is like, they found the person. It was a drunk driver. Oh, you're good. Gotcha.
Okay. I didn't hear.
Yep.
I missed that part. Because I thought maybe it was Jenny because she was like, went in and was like,
oh, yeah,
I told
she
him
wasn't
it wasn't
with,
you. Like,
yeah,
even
yeah.
though she thought it
that
was.
Been a twist.
Yeah.
No, I love how concerned Meredith was. It's like, you need to go to Canada. Yeah. Which I don't blame
like you
her.
You should speak to a lawyer.
Because you know if he gets talking, he'd be like, it was them.
Yes, exactly. So then,
him falling.
It was kind of like, wait, what?
Him falling was too convenient. Also, it was traumatic.
Yeah.
It was like, bah, bah, boom.
Yeah. I like... kind of appreciated Mayor, like, kind of doing the, like, am I going to get punched in the...
when she went to feel his pulse.
Yeah, like, that you kind of do with... I feel like that happens on SVU all the time, where they kind of, like...
Ooh. Yeah.
And...
I also feel like she was like, we're going to be slow about this. There is... You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. They obviously got a crash cart.
Yes.
But...
that scene, too, where Joe realizes they're, like, you get to choose whether and she bursts out laughing and like cackling. And John was like, why is she laughing?
And then she cries though.
Yeah. I was like, I think that she's just so fucking overwhelmed by it all. And it's like, really, it's this poetic that I get to choose. And then, and then it's just so much overwhelm of like, what I don't want to have.
She
to do
cries
this.
And then leans into Alex, which gets me. Okay. Like, I felt like they didn't make it more... I wanted it more explicitly clear that, like, he is brain dead. He will not come back from this. I guess they did. But when they were, like, harvesting the organs, part of me was very creeped out that, like, I could have a concussion and someone could be like, harvest them off.
I think he came in with a concussion and then he was brain dead.
Yeah. I
after
just like,
the second
I really wanted them to be like, he's gonna die, which I guess they did. They said unplug him.
Yeah.
But it kind of felt like, but could he stay alive on a vent for like ever? Or is it like he's gonna eventually
I think they
go?
Were like, his organs will start failing and like he'll
it just
die.
Felt very alien like,
yeah.
but beautiful. But also, I don't know that I'd want to watch that, but I guess she is a doctor. And the one girl kept saying, I'm a scientist. I was like, what does that mean? Like, what do you do?
Yeah.
She's a feminist and a scientist. Oh, I love that part though. And she said, I'm a scientist and a feminist. Like, how did I end up? Like, it doesn't matter who you are.
It does not matter. It does not discriminate at all. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that I really love. It's like, you don't realize you're in it until you're so deep in it.
Yeah.
Like that you can't. And then you're so convinced that a lot of the shit that you do is your fault and like you deserve it. So I think it's great that they did the title as like hotline for intimate partner violence.
Yeah. Cool.
So that's the hotline. And actually there's notes and trivia about that. They actually changed that.
Right. But on Disney Plus, it still has the old title.
Oh, does it?
I think I read that in the notes.
Gotcha. So I think that's really great that they did
really
that.
Great.
All in all, I think they did, like, for Grey's Anatomy and for, like, a couple episodes, I think they did a good job.
Yeah, it's also, like, thinking about what comes forward, I think, like, you know, you might assume, like, oh, Joe's problems are over. But it's, like, she still has the trauma of, like, her, like, what happened with her family, like, living in her car, the way this guy treated her. Like, it's not like the person's gone and then it's over.
No, it's like, a lifelong of unpacking mm-hmm. that and healing from that trauma and healing, like, your emotional responses to things. And
yeah.
So, yeah. She's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
To heal herself because of stupid Paul Stadler.
I'm just glad Schuster's off them.
Yeah, he's done. It feels, like, really wrapped up real quickly.
It did. It was two episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, he shows up. Well, it's because he shows up at the finale.
Right.
So it's like you have a whole summer.
And then he's just like, boopity bop.
Yeah. which I'm also glad about it. What else I'm glad about ending is the hacker.
Yeah.
Okay. This comedic...
It also feels like that rounded out really quickly too.
Yeah. Two episodes. The comedic moment of Bailey talking to Casey, getting the words like, you know, IP address, like all these things, and coming in and like talking like she knows what she's talking about to the FBI guy. That is the kind of small comedy in this show that I appreciate.
Yes.
Like those little moments.
Be like, ah, interesting. Like back out the door and be like, this is what was said. Yeah.
It was so good. I just felt like it was a dumb storyline to begin with, but I did feel like, and I'm still sad, this person like left, is not on the show very long. I feel like they're on season 14, maybe 15. I can't remember. But that this is like the only storyline I distinctly remember.
Of his, yeah.
Yeah, which is like great that we get the like reveal of why he hacked the DMV and, you know, that he's a trans man. And I really love that he said, but like, I want people to know me before they learn my intimate medical history. Like, I thought that was a great line. But I wish there was more. Like, it's the story of these interns.
Interns.
I just wish there was more of them.
I think that's surprising to hear because I bet watching this and the first time around, we might not have been like, I just want more.
Yeah, I was like, get all of these news people off my screen.
Yeah, but now it's like, no, they're not so bad.
It's like, also, I cannot get over. Helm has been here since season 14.
I know.
Kicking, why does she not have a storyline? If I was her, like the real person her, I'd be like, hello.
She probably doesn't want to pull on Izzy.
Oh, yeah, she why aren't you giving me more storylines?
I deserve an Emmy. So. Yeah.
Dude, although then remember when Ellen Pompeo like stood up for Izzy?
Like a day ago on her podcast? That was wild.
Someone in our Facebook group posted that like, because her podcast lately has just been posting like roundup episodes.
Uh-huh.
And someone's like, I think Ellen Pompeo's done with her podcast era. I was like, it is her flop era. I feel like it's like not her best moment.
Not for her.
Also, our friend.
Yeah. Do you think she'll keep going?
I don't know. Our friend and listener of the pod was also sending me a screenshot of someone who she had on. And he was like, I don't think she's like well equipped enough to be discussing with this
like
person.
Anything. With, yeah. Yeah.
So, anyways.
Yeah. I gotta go. We gotta just shout out one more time to her. No, oh. Her having Kate Walsh on and just like how erratic that whole episode was and how they went back and forth so much. Did we do a bonus episode on that?
We did. Also, all I can think about now is meow. Like, is Kate Walsh meowing? Which that sound, something about that like set me off.
Yeah. I'm just being like, yeah, like these kids these days, they're like asking, like, what are they going to do? They better do Grease. And then it was like, but I mean, they got to do what they, it was so outrageous. Oh my gosh.
Do you think, it felt like they were like on something.
Oh, I think, Kate Walsh had like flown like 22 hours or something and just like immediately went to record and was like, I haven't slept in days. Let's do this.
We're pouring wine if you hear it.
If you hear it, everyone.
This wine is good, right?
Yeah, it is really good. Thank you.
I'm a member of a wine club that I forgot about. It's like local. It's Cooper's Hawk. Every state has it. It's not that cool. But I forgot and I went.
So do you get like a bottle? I almost said a bottle a day.
Yeah, it's kind of expensive, but if you use all the perks, it's worth it. It's $21 a month.
Uh-huh.
You get a bottle of wine a month, but you also get one free tasting a month for two people.
Oh, fun.
Which those take like a while, and you get a certain percentage off dinners. And I was drunk and on my birthday when I signed up.
Yeah, you're like, I'll do this.
Because I got a free truffle on my birthday, I think, if I signed up.
Yeah, I think that was a great idea.
But I did get four bottles of wine today, so that's cool. So anyways, that's the hacker.
So that's the hacker. So we can move on from that. What do we want to talk about next?
Want to knock out these two quick ones, 3 and 4, Maggie and
Jackson. Oh, sure. Yeah. So Maggie and Jackson, we can tell that we're like inching towards them like dating.
Right. Like, okay, they wrap up the Paul storyline in two episodes. This Maggie and Jackson lead up is long.
Oh, yeah.
Is The Mist the season finale? No, it's the wedding.
But they're dating in The Mist. The Mist is the end of their relationship.
Right, so that's the end of next season, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Or it's a mid-season finale, maybe?
Yeah, it's something like
so
that.
So we got, I mean, like, this is a long haul.
A long build.
To nothing.
For them, ultimately, not to end up together. But I appreciate how hot both of them look in towels.
I picture that picture. I think you're beautiful, but that picture of the two of us in our towels at the beach.
Don't you dare. We did not look good.
Like, I what they look like wrapped in a towel. And I picture what me wet looks like.
Oh my gosh. We look like naked mole rats. And like.
It's so bad.
Also, we like both took like.
We were like, you know, when you take a photo and you get stuck on the wide end of the camera. Like, I think that happened to both of us separately. And like
side by side, it's hilarious, but no one will ever see it. I will not let anyone see that photo.
It's so bad. I just feel like, is that me?
No, I think about it often. Like, I can't believe that's who I am.
What's sad is in 10 years, I'm going to be like, I look so good.
I look beautiful. Oh my gosh. Now I don't even put a bathing suit on.
I don't get naked.
I don't go.
I shower with
I'm
my
a
clothes
never
on.
Nude now. I just shower with my clothes on.
A never nude. So yeah, we're leading up to that. Maggie still goes on the date with Clive from Tinder.
Yeah. There is a funny part. I'm just going to throw this out there. Yeah. In episode 12, Jackson calls him Chive. And John and I were laughing really hard about it. So look out for that one. Little spoiler alert.
I did appreciate that how much they're communicating. You know, where like he's like saying like, I'd be okay. Would you want to try? And she's like, I'm not saying no.
Yes.
Like, I feel like adults should.
I'm not saying no, but it is going to be very complicated if we do this because our families are very much intertwined.
I think they should have just banged it out. I think it really is just like a pile.
A sexual.
Yes.
Like, but yeah. Just like.
Just have a bunch of sex.
Don't need to go get a cocktail. Just go have sex.
Right. Exactly.
Or maybe get a cocktail to have sex.
Yeah.
One. To that, two.
Yeah. Don't go out and have a giant pasta dinner. You won't want to have sex after.
No.
Okay.
All right. So Richard, I mean, they're just doing the bippity bop.
I love
this.
Richard though. I love when he fucking does his games.
Oh yeah.
Like, you think he's this old man.
And but he's got it going on still.
He is the best at using being old, yes. Like as a way to get what he wants.
Yeah. But like it was handed off to Bailey and Bailey was like, shit, I want to do this. Right. So hands off to Richard. And then he's like, shit, I want to do this. And so he plays April.
Yeah, and then Jackson finds out about it, which I don't know where that's going, but clearly she tries to pawn it off on him.
Yeah.
And he's like, in his head, like, I fucking,
what?
This is my money.
Right.
I want to save the April one for the end, maybe?
Yeah, that's totally
fine. I feel
fine.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
We can talk about the Eric Sterling. When I couldn't believe, like when April was in the shower, I was like, oh, it's this episode. Mm-hmm. I forgot
that they were connected.
Yes, because I remember this episode also, but I did not remember them being together.
Yeah,
and
super heavy.
I think the drawing line is that line in April's monologue that says, where was God throughout all of Job's suffering and pain? He was winning a bet with Satan. Makes you wonder where he is through all of the unfairness and inequity and cruelty in the world. Where is he now?
Absolutely.
Because I think like that question was running through all of the doctors' minds. The parents' minds, like that, like where, like, why does this happen?
Yes. I think there were some really important, the whole storyline's extremely important. Just to touch one of them, none of these are in particular order or most important, but when like Jackson tells his story about living in like
a wealthy neighborhood
and being stopped by the police, and April's like, kind of does that doe-eyed, like, you never told me that. He's like, it's the kind of thing that doesn't come up unless it comes up, you know?
Right.
I thought that was a really good representation of someone who is white, not like kind of recognizing their privilege.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Even what April did when she said something like, it was a reaction in war. I've seen people just fire because they're scared. And she kind of corrects herself by saying like, no, like that was at war. This is different. But it's that mindset of like, being sort of like, it's almost like wanting to believe that the world isn't this fucked up and that there was a reason for it. Or that like, well, they couldn't have meant to.
Exactly.
Yeah. So like I liked that moment made me not cringe because we like, but just the way I think they wrote it so perfectly that like, it's a common thing that people say.
Yeah. And I think it does make you cringe a little bit, but I think that's a good thing of like, I think you're absolutely right that like the writing is so perfect of like, that's an argument that would be said and just like kind of missing the whole point of what is going on.
Yes.
That a young 12-year-old black boy was shot.
Yes, what broke my heart too, like just we're nailing the things that like stuck with us was when his parents get there and he says, I did go to the neighbors. Like, so they also had a set thing in place of like, okay, if you're locked out, first go to the neighbors. Like, don't climb in the window, you know? Yeah. But like, and the fact that he did do those steps, but still like couldn't get in. And
it also just, yeah, broke my heart when he was like, I want my mom. Because that is like, he's 12 years old. Mm-hmm. He's a child.
Yeah.
A child.
Yeah.
And he just wants his mom in that moment. And like for those police officers to be like cuffing him and standing over him in this moment where this poor child is pleading for his mother is like that's our world that we live in.
Yeah. And it's like the fact that, you know, they use two boys' names, Eric Garner and Alton Sterling, to create this name. It's like you in your brain, you want to be like, oh my God, this has happened twice. But it's like, this has happened so many times. Like, this is not like, and so it's just like, it's just heartbreaking. I think it was a really important storyline. I think this is sort of like, it feels a little bit like the beginning of Grey's taking I don't even want to say a stance because it's not a political stance.
No.
It is bringing to light stories that are happening in the real world and amplifying them. And I feel like they've always done that, but I feel like in the past four seasons or whatever, mm-hmm. it's been a lot more.
It seems like a little bit more, and I like what SVU does. Like there's a storyline specific that has come out mm-hmm. in the news, and they like adapt it into their show.
Yes.
I feel like Grey's has, like you said, done that in the last 5 years. Like, this is happening.
Yes.
And we're going to use our platform and like write a version of it for our show.
And it feels kind of like it has to be done because, like, I mean, the world is just kind of crazy.
The world's on fire.
Yeah. And so like it feels important that they're doing this. And I feel like this is kind of the beginning. Because I also know there's a storyline similar to this on Station 19. There's something.
Is there? I mean, I know nothing.
There's a police brutality storyline on Station 19 that I feel like I caught the end of. But I just think it's like, here we go. We're riding this wave. And I think it's important. So it also sparked, which to me is the most heartbreaking scene, is Bailey and Ben. Ugh. Also, especially because we know Bailey and Ben are fighting right now, mm-hmm. but they're sitting on that bench like united and like this has to happen. And
I did think it was kind of interesting that Tuck's dad wasn't a part of it.
I know. Tuck's dad is just
absent. I think it's, guys, I'm sorry. I know.
Budget cuts.
It's because budget cuts. But yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, I just think that like that, the way that they went through it, the fact that earlier we saw Tuck as like a young carefree mm-hmm. boy in science camp with Maggie watching, mm-hmm. Jake called it elephant toothpaste, that experiment. Oh, like where... He's like, I saw it on YouTube.
Of course.
But like where we see him laughing with his friend mm-hmm. in that, and then it snaps to the end of the episode and he is like having the most serious conversation of his life, was just like such a jarring, which I think is what they did to mm-hmm. be like, yeah, they're young, but like this is what black boys
have
to go
through.
Yeah, because
Tuck is, so that boy's 12 and then they're having Tuck say his name, how old he is, and he's 13. So he's a year older than this little boy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. It was really well done, I guess, is my biggest takeaway, is that it just felt like it hit you in a way that felt, for someone who is white, like it felt like it showed it in a way where I really, as close as I can to understanding, like was able to get a glimpse into that world, that bubble.
Yeah. So. I think, I also thought a really great scene was when Jackson was talking to the two police officers.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really great scene.
Yeah, actually
as well.
I have his quote.
Yeah. I think you should read it.
Which would be a great thing to end on. He says, okay, I have two quotes. He says, the police say to Jackson, they made a judgment call. And mm-hmm. Jackson says, there's no judgment in that call. It was just a reaction. You see skin color. We all do. But the reaction that you give to a white kid versus a brown kid in that split second, that's the measurable, fixable difference. Bias is human. You have guns. You are using guns. So yours is lethal.
Mm-hmm.
And then April, when they ask for a statement, you know, she says to them, you can't just keep shooting people because you are afraid. How am I supposed to have faith in a system like that? Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's another reflection of like, which we'll talk when we talk about April, like she's losing faith in the system of her religion that like fit into her life, mm-hmm. and also the system of like police protect us. Like yes. how, like, yeah. So
which is kind of like the reference back to like people in the army and like, you yes. know, these layers of like, we have these people in our lives who are supposed to protect us. Also to, I think it's an important line too. One of the police officers says, I'm not racist. And Jackson goes, I didn't say racist. I said, you have bias.
Right.
And I think that is an important point to make.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not getting into whether or not these police officers are racist or not, but that's a common thing that's said is like, well, I'm not racist.
Right.
And it's like, great. I didn't say that at all.
Yeah. I loved, again, the writing that Jackson's like, I didn't say that. Like yeah. You said that. Yeah. So it was just really well done. And it is obviously something that.
And devastating.
Yeah.
It's super well done and devastating. And then it's one of those things that when it's good television, it makes you step back and be like, fuck, like yeah. our world.
Yeah.
Because we know this is happening in our world.
The one, I don't know. I think this is just a reflection. I don't think I want an answer on this. This is like, I was just thinking about. Is I think it ended up being okay, but part of me was like, it's interesting that this is an episode about April and what she's going through. And I think it's okay is that it wasn't comparing what they were going through, you know, like, but it was interesting to me that it was like an episode about April.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, but
I think it was a reflection though of like the system crumbling beneath you of what you believe in.
Of what you believe in. Yeah. Yes. And I also think one of the biggest parts. Well, do we want to talk about that and then talk about Bailey's heart attack, or do we want to talk about Bailey's heart attack and then April?
No, let's talk about April now.
Okay. So I think the other big thing about what you just said. Now I have to get my thoughts in order. Is going back to the monologue. What was I going to say?
Well.
Wait, say again what you just said.
I said that it's like, at first I was confused. Like, I'm like, should they be focusing on April and her hard whatever she's going through in this system, in this episode, but what I think it's doing is trying to show how the systems we believe in are crumbling and like no longer can we rely on them.
Yes. Yes. I do agree with that, but I also think it is like the bigger theme, like systems, absolutely, but just like the whole idea of like the inequity in the world.
Yes.
Like, I know what I was going to say.
Okay, say it.
Because that whole idea of like, God only gives you as much as you can handle.
Yes.
That kept being repeated throughout this. And so it's like that whole theme. And then where is it in seeing a family watch their 12-year-old son die? How is God giving them as much as they can handle? That's
yes.
where I think it like ties in of like, this is absurd to believe in a God like this because of all the inequity. Like, that's fucked up. That's where I think it ties in.
That's great. Yes.
Okay, I don't know.
Two hands. Amen. Like, I really do think, yeah. And as you know, if you're anyone who's gone through something hard, when someone tells you that God only can give you what you can handle.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. I mean, like, to bring it back to the early part of this episode when I was talking, like, people have said that to my mom.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and it's just like, no.
No. Like, it's not comforting.
No. And it's like, then what, yeah, what kind of God is that? And we don't need to get into like.
I mean, I think we can.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to get into our own religious beliefs about right. it. Sure.
What I loved. Okay. Wow. Also, so this April one, we obviously have strong feelings about. Mm-hmm. I feel like for both of us, in many ways, it just like mm-hmm. hits home. Something that I think is even more interesting is like April, she may have started out in a way kind of like that boy who cut his hand off,
mm-hmm.
taking the scripture really literal about certain things. You shouldn't have sex before marriage, like all of this stuff. But I think she's really grown and changed.
Yes.
And what I thought was really interesting is that she has turned into someone whose beliefs, like, she had all those great, like, responses to that boy of, mm-hmm. like,
metaphors,
yes,
stories,
poems.
Yeah.
Like, it is, don't take it literal. Like, it, you know, and I felt like, whoa, this is a different April than who we first met.
Yes, I agree.
And so I was just like, I think it was sometimes people who are religious are shown a little bit unfairly in TV or things, if it's like exaggerated, like how April was early. But I feel like the way she was now is almost like this like mature, experienced life version.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like being all flipped also.
But. Well, yeah. And then having the unraveling of your faith and the crisis. And I think the crux is like all this other shit happened. But that big question that that child asks her, who tried to cut his hand off, is like, what is the point of this scripture or anything? If we were not to follow it, literally, what is the point of any of this? And then it's like, yeah, what is the point?
It was so hard to watch her when Matthew was talking to her about like...
Oh, annoying, like Samuel died.
Right.
Because he was like, you have a 3-year-old, I heard. And she's like, she doesn't.
Right. And he's like, I assume you're with Jackson. Like, it all worked out, didn't it? Like, if it weren't for you. And it's like, whoa, everything that she... Like, it didn't work out for her.
Yeah.
So, like, what does that mean? If it worked out for him and he's saying, like, it's, you know, God had a plan all along. She's like, well, is this my plan?
Right, right. And then Matthew still has this beautiful hope. And then his wife dies.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, what... Is that God's plan?
Right, right.
Is for him to be devastated a second time by losing... Because he says, like, she's the love of my life.
Yes.
And then... And then Paul dying and...
Which, like, she doesn't even care about Paul, but it's like, wait, he just had a concussion.
Well,
like,
and someone says, don't let Paul die, or don't let that patient die. That's said in the beginning of the episode.
Meredith says it.
Yeah, do not let him die. And then he dies.
Right.
And there's that scene, too, where she is going into surgery for Eric. Like, she's doing compressions. Mm. And then she comes in and it's Bailey and Jackson. She's like, where do you want me? And they're like, we don't need, like, everything felt like, towards the end of the episode is like, there's nothing she could do. Even when she was like trying to help with Karen and Robbins.
Arizona's
like,
yelling at her.
Yeah. Is like, get out of here. Why didn't you call me sooner? And then she was like, going to go talk to Matthew and Robin says, leave him alone.
Yeah. That part was really like, clearly, I mean, Robbins was just in the moment with the patient.
Yeah.
And like Robbins does find out later that like, her BP wouldn't have been like, it was normal, but that was elevated for her.
Right.
So it's like not April's fault. We did also hear Karen say that I always have low blood pressure, you know, like there is that little moment. Also they like got April to get to know Karen just enough where I think like she cared, you know, like, cause she cares about Matthew.
Yeah.
Mm.
There.
Also, did they not talk after she ran away? Because he said something, I cannot find my note, but he says something that makes it seem like they did not speak after that.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. He talks about how humiliating it was in front of all of his friends and family and his dearest people that like, there is, so for me, like watching the unraveling, the end of the episode when she is, when that monologue is going on. So it finished, John was watching, and I was like holding back tears because I was with John. I like could have wept, but I've seen this episode maybe one other time, but I remember when this episode came out, I made John and I had just started dating.
You made him watch this?
I made him watch the ending monologue. I was like, I think this is so beautiful and so haunting. And as someone who was raised in a very religious home, who had to unpack that and unravel that for herself and walk away and question if I believed in anything and come to terms with and be angry with God. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting to me is here in this monologue, she's not saying she doesn't believe in God.
Right.
She's saying like, fuck you, God. Like, where have you been? You're making a deal with Satan. And like, why have you forsaken me? Jesus calling out on the cross. Like, it's this like bottom of the pit of like, my life is so fucked. Everything's so fucked in the world. And I thought you would be there for me. And you are nowhere to be found.
Right.
And then for me, that led into, well, are you even a thing?
Yes. You know, like it's like she got to all of those checkpoints and those question marks. And then when that boy asked her, I think that when he asked her and she has to think, she realizes she doesn't know.
She doesn't know.
Like, cause I feel like old April would have like totally spilled out some answer. But like when you've gone through shit, that is, how do you continue to like say that like God puts you through this? God's always there for you when yes. you don't feel that.
Yeah. And I feel like we've never addressed something like this in Grey's Anatomy. Mm-mm. And I feel like so many people go through this.
Yeah.
And it is exhausting and terrifying. It's like having your whole world ripped out from underneath you.
Yeah. And I think like it makes the payoff of April's character so worth it. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's extra powerful because it's not like they just quick inserted this. Like, this has been a long time coming. Like, yes. we've known this part of her. So to see someone who literally that defined her, to see her question that is really like, whoa. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's really good television.
Yeah. But like that ending scene, I don't know how you but like, pit of my stomach emotions when
she
I watched.
Goes to the bar.
When she and she's in the shower. And
when he what got me is when he says, "Can I like is there room for me?" And she just goes, "Yep." Yeah. Like she, I feel like there's mind body connection is not. I wrote she is so disconnected.
I also I just got chills. I got really, really fucking sad when he goes, and what did he get for speaking of Job, replacement children? And I thought of Harriet for Samuel, like. Her first child dies. And I'm not saying that she thinks Harriet is a replacement child, but like it does kind
PTSD.
Of PTSD. Like, is it worth it to be a faithful servant? My marriage ended. Mm-hmm. Like, or would it been worth it in the beginning to just like fuck God? And like, I could probably maybe be with Jackson. We had like a really complicated thing there. Like, it just is like, I don't know. Clearly this is like and I have said this from the beginning of the podcast. This is one of like one of the most important like moments in Grey's Anatomy for me. And I feel so many GGBs when I watch it. And even the tone of like the acting of April's voice in the monologue.
It's so good. And also we've seen her go to the chapel so many times. Mm-hmm. When she went this last time, it felt like a last resort, like a desperate.
Yeah.
Please show yourself because I'm at my wit's end. And then Karen died.
Yeah.
Like it just like, it literally like, it didn't feel like how it felt when she went in past times. Also like, cause I feel like when she went before it was like a comfort. And mm-hmm. I feel like when she went now it was like, please. And there was nothing like it didn't do anything for her. Also on like a flip side of like someone who's accepting that light, like Joe has that line when they're taking the organs out of Paul and she says, there's light and darkness and they both coexist. And sometimes it's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I think like in that moment, we're seeing a moment where like terrible, shitty things happen, but like sometimes it coexists at the same time.
Yes.
But not always. Like, and clearly with like Eric Sterling, with Karen, like that is not a time that it coexisted.
Yeah. But I think that's a really good point about Joe.
And like just bringing such a good in episode. That.
I mean, did it make you feel about things about your own religious personal journey?
Oh, abso-fucking-literally, yeah. I mean, it's like so relatable. I do wish I had like a fall apart era like she did, like the drinking at bars. It, like,
all of my 20s.
Yeah. Like part of me was like, that also on one weird level, not felt good, but like it felt like she just finally threw away.
Yeah.
Like, cause I mean, she was even talking about with Jackson earlier that she didn't think they should be sleeping together if they're not in a relationship.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, whatever. And then she's doing the one thing that was kind of like her last holding on.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. I was confused. I know she ends up sleeping with Tom mm-hmm. and that's like a good part. I feel like it, or it like gets her
out of where
yeah,
she's
but,
at.
But I thought that the shower scene was with Tom and it's not. So that was shocking.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's with that intern.
I'm going to fucking end up loving the shit out of Tom.
And then he leaves us.
And I'm going to want him to be Teddy.
I'm also going to end up loving the shit out of April. I'm so happy they gave her this in her last season.
And I think it was good.
And why the fuck does she end up? We'll get there with Matthew. It just drives me crazy because this is like... This is life. I mean, the questioning and like the...
They shouldn't have ended up getting married.
Oh my God.
Trauma married.
And the extreme distraught feelings you have when your life and your beliefs aren't what you thought they were. And then you marry Matthew? No. That's not what you do.
She should have just moved away.
That would have been fine.
That would have felt like a pull of Meredith.
Yeah.
Okay, we still have to talk about Bailey.
Oh my God.
There's not too much. I mean,
there really isn't that much. I mean, it was a bottle episode. So it was just Bailey's story. I don't want to like say there's not too much because there are a lot of really important points about
women
like,
being women, ignored. Black women, of color. Being,
yes, exactly. And like, I think those are really important points that we should touch on.
I love that Maggie, like Bailey says it, you know, she's like reciting fucking stats to this guy, but then Maggie sends it home also. And is just like, in, like livid about the level of care and that she had to advocate for herself. Because also I think this episode was also really hard for me to watch knowing like my mom just had a heart attack and like seeing, well, like, you know, the guy was going to just crack her chest open and Maggie's like, why would you put her through hell if there's this other thing you can do? And like, I know from my mom having that surgery, it is hell. Like, and so like, I thought that like, I never would have, I mean like just whatever, crack the chest open, you know, like, but like, cause I know nothing, but like, I was like, oh wow, good save Maggie. Like she would have been out of commission for months.
And then calling him out for like, you don't want to do that cause you don't know how to do it.
Right. Clearly Seattle Press should be shut down.
Shut the fuck down. Yeah. And it is interesting that Bailey goes there, but it just shows you how much, like how she feels about being portrayed at her job.
Yeah.
Which I think is important too. Like she has worked her fucking ass off because you have to work quadruple the amount as a woman of color to get to where you're at. And then you get there and then I would imagine you would want to protect your image.
Yeah. I really was like, damn, for someone going through like having heart attack symptoms, creative thinking, being like, I have a meeting at Seattle Press, keep dropping it. It's
tabbed on my schedule.
Yeah, like the way she even is like smart with him. I was like, I really believed she had a meeting.
Yeah. I forgot that this was this episode, but when she started taking like Tums, I was like, oh, she's having a heart attack because women's symptoms present so much differently than men's.
Yes.
And she talks about that. I also love that Richard just shows up.
Same. He's like, you've never taken a sick day. I know you're here.
Yeah, I knew you were here.
And he heard in the background them calling for a doctor, whatever. Yeah, Richard, and Richard, when he's with Maggie and she's like, are you okay? He has that thing about like, we really should be checking in on each other more. Like, what are we doing? We're too busy taking care of others to check in on each other. And I think that's such a so true statement about like life. Like I think about my friends who have kids and who like, it's like, how are you?
Yes.
Like you fine? You good?
You good.
And I love that Maggie's then like, how are you? And he's like, I will be fine if she is fine.
Yeah.
Their work wife.
And then husband. Also Catherine bringing the
Wagyu beef. Catherine is, when she's like, I didn't fucking get these. My driver did.
Yeah.
Also that I was surprised by Ben just starting to eat. I guess though he was in line for food.
For a hot dog.
Yeah, so he was hungry.
But also, well, whatever.
He climbed 60 flights of stairs. Also, Jake was watching the beginning of this with me and like Jake is currently like applying for fire and he has to do that physical agility test. And he was like, I was like, Bailey didn't even care about that test. And he's like, that test is really hard.
Oh.
So anyways.
I thought like quickly, maybe let's talk about two other or flashbacks. We can talk about as many, flashbacks I wanted to mention. And then also learning about her childhood.
Oh yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
Her dad just throwing that fact out there to her. Like how, like that would be really hard to go through life and not know that. And then find that out when you're older. Cause that would explain so much. Like, I feel like I'd have more empathy for my parents had I not known that. Like,
yeah, so they had a child who died of SIDS.
And she was not even 2 months or something.
Yeah, and so they, like, blame themselves, or the mom blames herself. And so you can see why she's so protective with Miranda.
Yes.
Doesn't
want her to ride a bike that she lets have her have the...
She can't go in the treehouse or read in the tree.
The cropped pants so that she doesn't get caught in the bicycle.
Yeah, she can't come home before the... I mean, and also you're a child and that's a little safety thing when the lights come on. But just adding into all of these things. And then so to have to watch Miranda have to call her mom.
Oh my God, that...
And then her mom being okay and being like, I know you'll be okay. Like, you're okay. I was like, growth, healing. Oh,
yeah,
God.
That's like the like when you think your parent won't be able to handle it, but then they... You forget that they are your parent and like sometimes they can handle it because they did for like at least the first 10 years of your life. Like,
and also her not being like, I got a heart attack, or she's the first thing she said, I'm hurt, mom.
Yeah. Oh, she's,
it's like childhood things.
And like that you can be a mom yourself and still need your mom. Like, Oh my God. Also, it made it even more devastating to me to, because those are the same actors, I believe, that play her parents in the COVID season.
Yes.
I'm not, was it, they both die?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not okay with that.
Yeah.
And they die in such a horrible way.
Yeah, it's awful. It's just awful.
Her dad is so great.
Yeah. I mean, her dad wasn't great when she divorced Tuck.
Oh, wait, is it the same actor?
I think so. I don't know. I shouldn't say I think so.
You're I'm right. Sure. I forgot about that. But we'll give him.
He was in there. Her mom wasn't.
Yeah.
Some type of actor.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Wow. Flashbacks.
Sean, a lot of.
Oh, gosh. I had feels about some of them.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go.
The George one, when George is helping her give birth. Because again, Miranda's character is so constant. That's how she was when she fucking was like, no, I'm not giving birth.
Yeah.
I'm waiting.
This baby's not coming today. Like, yeah, I need my husband.
Yeah. That one. And then when she hugs Derek and I forget, she's just like so upset. I can't remember what she's upset about.
I can't either,
but that one. And then the Charlie one too. Charles.
Yeah. With like, the elevator and the pulling of the, and the one where, oh, there's a flashback about her having OCD.
Yes.
And then, oh, they call a psych consult.
Oh yeah. That guy.
Yeah.
I loved, I wrote, I go, fuck, these flashbacks just show me how good of an actor Chandra Wilson is.
Incredible. Incredible.
But the flashbacks felt really important too, also to remind us how long Ben has been. And when she finally is like, Benjamin, or when she like wants him there.
Mm-hmm.
And his reaction, oh, when he says, like, you call me. You call me. Like, it doesn't matter that we're fighting. Like,
I know. And then
she's not used to being taken care of.
Well, I know. And when she's like going into her big surgery, she's like, call my husband. Like, I need my husband. And then when he says he quits and whatever, and she's like, don't quit, blah, 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 blah. But then she says, but you use that fireman ladder and you build me like the highest tree possible. Like a girl needs like
a quiet place to read.
And I was like,
she wants to rest.
Baby Bailey, because she wanted to go up in the trees and she was reading in the trees and her mom wouldn't let her.
All I can think about, though, is now her literally quitting in season 18.
She's going to go make cookies.
Also, I love that she says to Ben, Benjamin Warren, you call him back. You fighting fires terrifies me. Life is terrifying.
Yeah.
But I could die of a heart attack and you could die crossing the street tomorrow. George reference.
Yeah.
Life is too precious to waste doing anything less than what makes us happy. You get to be happy. Like, like she's just like, fuck. She's almost like kind of being like her mom, like wanting to protect Ben. And then just realizing that like you can have a heart attack just out of nowhere. So who cares what you do?
Yeah. It's like an interesting contrast to last episode. Like it's very dramatic, but at the end, Bailey kind of has this like moment of like, you got to live life to your fullest. And April is like in a completely different
place.
Yeah.
Also, the flashback that also really got me was the one when she says to Callie, like, yes, your baby could die in a car accident. Like that's being a mother. Yeah. Like that. Oh, that one really got
me. She's like, it goes away. Some of it.
Some, yeah, but not all of it.
Yeah.
That's being, she goes, you're a mother. Like that's, it sounds awful.
Absolutely terrible.
So anyways, wow, that was a lot, gang.
All right, should we do notes and trivia?
Yeah, you start.
Okay, I would love to. The episode song title originated from the song 1-800-799-7233. I'm going to read that again for people. 1-800-799-7233. Originally sung by the Uppity Blues Women, it is the number for the domestic violence hotline. It was originally named Four Seasons in One Day, a Crowded House song.
While it was not specifically named after the song by the Uppity Blues Women, it doesn't technically break the pattern of naming episodes after song titles. Showrunner Krista Vernoff was made aware of this by several fans on Twitter as she mistakenly believed there was no song with that title. Cool.
The title change was suggested by Giacomo.
DeLuca.
Yeah, we love him.
This makes it the first episode ever of which the title consists of only numbers.
On Netflix, this episode was initially incorrectly labeled under the previous name Four Seasons in One Day. It was corrected.
And then Disney Plus, it still is labeled as the previous name.
Stupid. next one. Episode, or is this the same one? The episode scored 8.27 million viewers.
I'm going to skip to Camilla Luddington filmed a PSA about the National Domestic Violence Hotline.
The scene where Casey comes out to Bailey was first written in a much more subtle way, without the use of the actual word trans. But the director didn't understand what the scene was about. After consulting with GLAAD, Krista learned people wouldn't get it because trans men are so underrepresented on television. The scene was then rewritten time and time again until the final result. Good.
At the end of the episode, Meredith can be heard saying goodbye to Christina on the phone. Oh. How does that one end?
I don't...
It's the Joe... I can't remember.
I can't either. Next episode, originated from the song Personal Jesus, originally sung by Depeche Mode.
Scored 8.62 million viewers.
Eric Sterling's character name was we talked about this after Eric Garner and Alton Sterling, both of whom were killed by police.
April starts questioning her faith and life decisions during this episode.
Krista Vernoff considers the talk scene between Bailey, Ben, and Tuck as one of the most difficult and important scenes ever featured in the show and during her writing career.
The episode features the return of paramedic Matthew Taylor, who made his last appearance in Get Up, Stand Up.
As revealed by set decorator Nicole Kramer on social media, the shower scene takes place at April's
dope
new
shower.
Place.
Dope shower.
Dope as fuck.
Next one. The episode's title originated from the song Don't Fear the Reaper, originally sung by Blue Oyster Cult. Also is the more cowbell song.
Yes. The episode scored 8.93 million viewers.
This is the second episode of the entire series not to feature Meredith Grey in any way. The first one being Who is He and What is He to You?
The episode features flashbacks that fill in the blanks about why Bailey is the way she is, about stability, risk, excellence, and anxiety. Aside from those new flashbacks, the episode also heavily features flashbacks to previous episodes.
Bailey's parents, Elena Bailey and William Bailey, reappear after last appearing in the season 9 episode Things We Said Today.
Elizabeth Finch wrote the episode inspired in her experiences as a misdiagnosed cancer patient.
In 2002. Oh.
Whoa.
Wait, in 2022, news broke that Elizabeth Finch had fabricated much of her life story, including her cancer diagnosis.
That
Who
was that
cancer
article
in this episode. Maybe like Bailey.
Oh, like, maybe about like being missed or not being listened to or whatever.
Which because she didn't even have cancer.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow.
Harper Avery, George O'Malley, Kelly Torres, Mark Sloan, Derek Shepherd, Gary Clark, Charles Percy, and Mary Portman all appear in flashbacks. The flashbacks featuring George, Mark, and Derek were intended to showcase Bailey's fear of dying.
Mm. Okay, wow. Oh, I'm going to change mine because I was going to go that high, but I was feeling nervous about it.
Okay, Catherine Fox Award. This is tough.
There's just so many.
There's so many. So we might have to give a few.
Yeah, like I want to give one to Joe.
Absolutely. I'll give one to Joe any day.
And Jenny.
And Meredith for being there. And Kreb, like in that episode. I want to give one to Bailey for like fucking
advocating
for herself. I want to give one to April for losing her religion.
Losing my religion.
I want to give one to Jackson.
Yeah, this is like, we can't choose one.
No, this was like, there were a lot. I rated it a 9 out of 10.
Oh, honestly, and like, all three.
Could I go 10 out of 10? Maybe.
Episode 10 for me would be a 10 out of 10. I
agree. The other two, probably 9s. So.
Paul's hitting his head the second time was
Little much.
Never seen anything.
I'm shocked at how much I'm liking season 14.
Dude, people told us we would. Are they going to say that about season 15?
I hope not, because I think it starts to go downhill again.
I think so, too. Wow, thanks for sticking around this long. We have post-op for those of you who are patrons. We're going to talk about the deck.
Oh, yeah.
But otherwise, Time of Death
is 20.